The Mortal Sickness, written by Andrew Taylor and read by Philip Franks.
Part 1. Chapter 1. Jill knew at once that the woman was dead. The knowledge struck her like a revelation, absolute and unassailable. Her certainty had something to do with the woman's grotesquely abandoned pose, and something to do with the smell in the little room, which reminded her not unpleasantly of compost and incense. The Reverend Alex Sutton sucked air through his teeth in a lingering hiss. He half turned in the vestry doorway, spreading his elbows like a pair of wings in an attempt to prevent Jill from seeing what lay inside. His plump face was pale, his eyes huge behind the gold-rimmed glasses. "There's been an accident, Miss Francis. Would you run across to the vicarage and ask my wife to ring the doctor?" Jill craned past Sutton's arm. The woman lay on her back in the far right-hand corner of the vestry. One of her knees was bent, and the skirt of her flowered dress had ridden up. Over the dress was an unbuttoned coat the colour of milk chocolate. You could see the ribbed top of a stocking with a triangle of white thigh above it, and a handful of dark, curling hairs on the skin. Jill glimpsed a pink, lacy suspender, an oddly decorative touch in an outfit so clearly chosen with practicality in mind. "The doctor, Miss Francis?" the vicar prompted. The woman had fallen with her head propped against the wall, which gave her an incongruous appearance of alertness. She was wearing gloves. The pallor of her face contrasted sharply with the dull and improbable black of the hair that had escaped from the headscarf. The eyes were open, cloudy blue with dilated pupils. The mouth gaped too, revealing grey fillings, well-brushed teeth, and the pink intimacies of the gums and the tongue. On the wall above her was a memorial tablet, flanked by smirking cherubs, each with a stone cornucopia balanced precariously on his head. "Who is it?" Jill asked. "Her name is Catherine Kimmin. Now please hurry." Jill blurted. "But she's dead." "Perhaps. But phone for the doctor. Run!" Sutton probably knew far more about death than she did, Jill realized. In a manner of speaking, it was part of his job. She turned and bolted out of the vestry. It was such a pleasant church, she thought with a sense of outrage. Tall, large, and well-lit, with aisles almost as wide as the nave. The sunlight caught the brass eagle of the lectern and converted it into glittering gold, so bright that it hurt the eyes. Behind the eagle stood the facing rows of richly carved, late medieval choir stalls, stately and silent like disapproving witnesses. One of the stained-glass windows threw a patch of reddish-purple, like a pool of blood, on the floor of the south aisle. She swerved round the font to avoid it. Motes of golden dust danced in the air. To her surprise, she wanted to justify herself to Mr. Sutton, to explain that her curiosity had not been idle. It was part of her job to be curious, just as it was part of his to know about death. The iron latch on the south door was cold to the touch. Cold as charity. Cold as death. She wondered whether the church was locked at night. The door closed behind her. She stumbled over the worn flagstones of the porch into the sunlit churchyard. Time seemed to have slowed, and the workings of her mind to have accelerated. The warmth of the outside world was a pleasant contrast to the cool of the church. She followed the path round the west tower. The northern side of the churchyard sloped away before her. Everything was so strangely normal. The colours were supernaturally crisp and fresh. The blue sky, the grey stones, the yellow lichen, the green of the cropped grass, and the darker green of the yews, and beyond the lych gate, the flaking cream facade of the vicarage. Jill ran down the path to the gate. Once she tripped and nearly fell, and she managed to graze her hand against the gatepost. It was as if her mind and her body were no longer operating entirely in tandem. A stone angel stared down at her from his perch on a tomb, and for a split second she thought he was smiling at her. "I must be going mad," she thought, for some part of her mind was still capable of standing aside and observing her thoughts and actions with clinical interest.